You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. Monday, March 21st. Happy Monday, everybody. Yes, we are upset, heartbroken, depressed, whatever you want to say. That's what we are.
I'm all right.
I mean, we're all right. But here's the thing. We knew this day was coming. Noah, my partner in crime, how you doing today, man?
I was heartbroken last night. Slept on it. I'm fine. It's okay. It's whatever. There's an NCAA tournament happening right now.
Yeah. And Auburn is no longer in it. That is, of course, the news we will lead off with today.
Quick way for me to lose interest in the dance. Knock my team out. Burn my bracket on day one. Both of those factors lead to peak apathy for the rest of the month.
Yeah.
It's baseball season, baby!
The best month of the year just got really not. I mean, it turned really quickly in a matter of 2 days because my bracket was destroyed on day one like everybody else. And then, of course, Auburn not able to make it past the round of 32. But don't worry, folks. We're going to break it all down. We're going to discuss it all show long. Not every segment, but we will definitely harp on it and talk about what in the world happened in Greenville. But if you want to give us a call and give us your opinion on anything going on in the sporting world, you want to talk about Auburn losing to Miami in the round of 32 last night, or anything else going on your mind, sports-related, give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. We're taking your calls all day long. And let's break it down. Let's go ahead and talk about it. Auburn, they lost to Miami yesterday in the round of 32 in what was one of the sloppiest games that Auburn has played all season long. And they, I mean, look, when you break it down and you just watch this team play in that game yesterday, that's the team that has been playing over the past 2 months. I think the game against JSU was a little bit of a fluke. I was confident and I felt really good about Auburn going into last night's game. I really thought they had a chance to go in there and win that ball game easily, and they just didn't. They didn't play well at all. And when you look at it, that's the team that's been showing up. We'll continue to break it down. But let's head to the phone lines, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Ty the Tiger, welcome in.
What's going on, guys?
How are you, man?
Oh man, just finishing this long 4-hour trip back, guys. Oof.
Did you enjoy your stay in Greenville? Was it a good time? I know obviously the result wasn't great, but was it a fun trip? I didn't catch that. Your phone kind of went in and out a little bit. It was a fun trip?
And on the way up there, we didn't know that we bought the tickets for both games.
Oh, yeah, so, you buy tickets to sessions. So you probably had a pretty fun time getting to watch all of those games.
So again, we're on the way up there yesterday, and we look at our tickets, and we're like, hey, our tickets say it starts at 5:15. Our game starts at 7:45. So cool enough, we actually got up there. I mean, literally ran to the stadium at like 5:25. We walked in the door. It was like 10 to 9, you know, at Duke, Michigan State. So that was a game, and that was worth it. And that was just cool just to watch those two teams, the Blue Bloods, you know, play in that kind of arena and just that game itself. I mean, that was a game. That was a game I kind of expected with Auburn and Miami, but didn't happen. But, man, that was cool. And then downtown Greenville was awesome. I mean, it was a good trip, man, other than the result. It was a fun trip, cool city, and not that far from Auburn. If we make it again, yep, I definitely will go again, you know.
I'll be honest, they hold that as a tournament site most years. I would imagine every year, I say most years because I don't know 100%. But I'll be honest, even if Auburn's not playing in Greenville, just because if, you know, there's a chance Auburn could be playing on the other side of the country and that's kind of expensive, just because the NCAA tournament's a cool experience, it's 4 hours away. Like I said, it's not that far from Auburn. I'd be willing to take a trip there, just me, my family, to go and watch some cool basketball because the NCAA tournament is a blast.
Well, I mean, being honest with you guys, I kind of had our doubts making it to the Final Four. I do have tickets to the Final Four. So now I'm a full-pledged Duke fan. After seeing what their home games went for, the last home game, I can't imagine what I could sell my Final Four tickets for if they make it to the Final Four.
That's fair. You might want to wait until that time rolls around. You might want to wait a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so I'm rooting for Duke, Kansas, Arizona now. I want the big boys with the big money in there. So, but either way, you know, that's what we decided, like, hey, let's go watch a tournament, you know, a tournament game with Auburn in it. And it was a cool event. Now, to the game, I just felt like, you know, man, you know, when we brought it to one at half and we were going into halftime, I said, you know, this always happens. We start slow, claw back in there. You look at all the games. Vanderbilt comes to mind. We got ran out the court at Vanderbilt and then came back in halftime and just demolished them. And I totally expected that. But, I mean, I just didn't see any adjustments. We really got out-coached. We really got out-coached. I know our players didn't play the best, but, man, they scouted us good. They had a game plan. They executed it to perfection. They wanted it. I mean, they looked. I mean, you know, they looked quicker, and they couldn't miss a shot. I mean, they just really couldn't miss a shot. It was devastating. But you know, hey, there was a lot of Auburn faithful there. We still love our basketball team. And the word around town that I heard that I did want to, you know, drop that Kessler has informed everybody he's probably coming back. So that's some silver linings, guys. And, you know, I'm a fan of the team. I'm not out there dribbling the ball. I didn't make it to be an SEC head coach, so I don't criticize too much. But as a fan, man, I just feel like we got out coached big time last night. We really did.
Well, unfortunately, that's not the first time that's happened this season or in Bruce Pearl's career. I love the man. I think he's a fantastic head coach. But there are times where, yes, he absolutely gets outcoached. And I think last night was another case and another scenario of that. Todd the Tiger, we appreciate your call. Have a safe trip back, man.
You too, guys. Hey, one last thing, man.
Yeah.
I just was talking about this with my buddy on the way back, you know, because we were talking about Kessler. You know, they say Kessler, his family don't need the money, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of part of his reasoning. You know, and I think I said this to you guys before, man, you know, what a team this would have been if Sharif Cooper would have came back and we had that type of point guard.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd have been something dangerous, guys. But hey, it's always next year, and we're gonna be really good. And we'll be there, and we'll be rooting. And War Damn Eagle, guys.
War Eagle to you. Appreciate the call. Look, I agree. I mean, if this team had a point guard presence like a Sharif Cooper, it would have been nasty. I mean, let's just be honest, it would have been nasty. But at the same time, again, I think last night Auburn losing to Miami, we saw some of the same scenarios with Bruce Pearl getting outcoached and not making the right decision. I know it's easy for us to say because we're not in the situation, but...
Oh, no, in his press conference after the game, and I do think we need to qualify this a little bit for folks out there. Just because you say your coach got outcoached or maybe, you know, he lacks in one area does not mean he's a bad coach.
Exactly.
And that's not all what we're saying, but I saw a lot of stuff on social media last night where apparently this team, even after grossly underachieving by how talented they were, even after all of that, there are people that are still thinking that this team's above reproach. There's a complete difference between talking bad or bad-mouthing this team or bad-mouthing players and just looking at what happened in the game and saying this is what happened and being objective about it and not being emotional. And I think it's perfectly fine to say last night that Auburn got out-coached and didn't make any adjustments. I don't think that's bad-mouthing or anything like that. I don't think that's putting them down. I think it's objectively looking at what happened last night. And that's not saying Bruce Pearl's a bad coach. He's a great head coach, and I love that he's here at Auburn, and I'm not saying that Auburn should go any other way. You know, people just need to quit with the extremes. I think it's very possible for great coaches to just get out-coached some nights. And last night, that happened.
And to go on to your point, there's a difference between dogging this team and dogging the players and the coaches and saying, oh, they did horrible, versus just breaking down what happened. That's exactly what you were just saying.
Take the emotion out of it. Just say what happened last night. Let's be real.
And come at it from a professional standpoint and just break down what happened. We do it not just with Auburn. We do it with any other team that competes in any other sport at any other time. And so, yes, we do it more because we love Auburn, we're at Auburn Station, all of that. Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, we're just breaking it down objectively and looking at it at what happened. And this is not, again, this is not the first time that this team has underperformed in a game. They got outplayed, out-hustled, out-coached, didn't make adjustments. And that's what happens. And you are going to lose in March when you have those trends and you don't change the things that you have wrong with your team. And I've been saying it for a long time. And I understand that after the JSU game, I was a little bit more confident. I was like, wow, maybe this team did flip the switch. Maybe this team did take the turn that I didn't think they could do. But then they burned me. And you saw it in their performance last night against Miami. It was never, Auburn never led. 40 minutes of a ball game, they never had a lead in that entire ball game.
I was in Ty's boat at halftime. I was thinking, okay, they pulled it back. They're going to be fine. Because they did pull it together right there before the break. They started playing better basketball right before the half. But then Miami went on an 8-0 run to start the second half. And I said, oop, here we go.
Here we go again.
You know, still, they were only down by 9 with 17:34 left in the second half. That, you know, and then they made it a 7. I even think they may have gotten it back to a 6-point game at one point. Yeah, they did. They got it back to a 6-point game, a 5-point game, even going through the game track. So as close as a 5-point game there in the second half with 13 minutes left, you're thinking, yeah, this is manageable, right? But they just ran out of gas. And you're hitting the nail on the head. There was not a whole lot of adjustments being made. There was Bruce last night was quoted at his press conference when they asked him about Miami's game plan and how they went after it against Auburn. He said, look, basically, this is me paraphrasing here, but basically he said, you know, if I had the answers, I would have made the change, right? He didn't know what to do. He basically said he didn't know what to do to counter what Miami was doing.
That can't happen, man. That cannot happen.
I think that does happen more times than like we think. Like it's easy once again for us to be on the mics and say that. I think in a live game situation, it's a whole different ball game for coaches. Also, there's the, you know, he's not going to throw his players under the bus either. So let's be honest about that. He's not going to throw his players under the bus. And at some point, the players, I think, through the course of a season, do themselves have to adjust and take it upon themselves to play the game the right way. And I don't think we'll ever know, you know, what truly the issue was with this Auburn team this year. Was it a mental issue? Was it, you know, was it a game plan? Was it strategy? Was it the players just literally not, you know, doing what they were needing to be doing in game? You know, by that, I mean an execution, you know, issue. You know, I don't think we'll ever truly know with this team, especially considering when you qualify with how talented they are. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you find what the issue was with this team when they were that talented, right? But to be fair, and why I think some of it is X's and O's and some of it is coaching, is because Auburn didn't adjust. We've seen Auburn be guarded like this for the last 11 games, maybe longer, and nothing changed. And nothing changed last night. And what I mean by how Auburn was guarded was teams just double-teamed Auburn's guards. Every time there was a screen, they double-teamed. And Miami has a team that is positionless basketball. Miami has a team that switches a lot, that has guys that can guard multiple positions. Jim Larrañaga's got a team that maybe isn't the most gifted defensively, but last night they executed their defensive game plan from a pressure standpoint and from trapping and double-teaming off of these screens and hedging off of these screens, and they had the right personnel to be able to do that at a high level. Not every team out there, even great defensive teams, I don't think maybe necessarily have everything that they need to do to be able to shut Auburn down, but Miami definitely had the pieces from a personnel standpoint to give Auburn major issues last night, and they executed it to perfection.
But what Miami did wasn't anything crazy or out of the ordinary.
No, they've seen it before.
The scouting report on Auburn to play defense on this Auburn basketball team was out there for everybody to see.
You know what's crazy? We didn't just see it this year. We've seen it other years. I've seen other teams play Auburn this way in other seasons. Saw it in 2017 to 2018 and how that season came to a smoldering conclusion.
It's because
and then in 2018, 2019, I think when Auburn really went through that dry spell in February and we were seeing Auburn struggle, I remember a certain Arkansas game that they played that year and it was not fun. Teams were guarding Auburn that way that year as well. And Auburn just never quite, you know, figured it out until they just got extremely hot and just started, you know, becoming red, scorching hot from three, right? And that's what helped fuel their run to the Final Four that year. But I do think there have been multiple occasions. Auburn's best teams that they've had over the last several years have definitely been guarded that way, and they have struggled against it.
Because that's how Bruce Pearl runs his offense, and he has one way of running offense, and he's going to stick to it no matter what. And yeah, the Final Four team, it worked because they could actually shoot the basketball. This team
cannot shoot the basketball.
They proved they cannot shoot the ball at all, not consistently at all. I mean, and that's, and the teams that played Auburn, when they would play defense, they knew how to do it. They would double team the guards off the high pick and roll. They would just double team them. And Wendell Green is, he's shorter than everybody else. That's not a fault. You know, that's not talking bad about him. He just is. He's shorter than everybody else.
It's hard to get that pass up over.
When they come up and double team him and they're literally standing over him, what's he supposed to do? And so if you're Bruce Pearl or any of the coaches, in my opinion, you've got to figure out a different way to run a different style of offense to make your team successful, because I understand coaches have their game plans. They have how they, their way of coaching, their way of doing it. They recruit players that they think are going to fit their system. But at what point this season, obviously it didn't happen. But
well,
at
I like
point,
that you're saying that, because at some point, though, you do get, I think there is a point of no return.
Exactly.
In a year, because you can't just start injecting new things into your offense because you just don't have time to work on those things.
But you could adjust it a little bit. That's what I'm saying.
You can make this tweaks.
This was Auburn and Bruce Pearl with his players just doing the same exact thing, throwing the same game plan out there and just hope it worked. Sometimes it did, but more times than not, as of late, it didn't. I mean, Auburn ended the season on, you know, under 500 in their last however many games.
Not true. They were 6-5 over their last 11.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
6-5 over their last 11.
Well, you know what I mean. So,
no, they may have been under 500 in a smaller time period than that. But.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's what I guess that's kind of what I meant. But
their last three games, they were definitely under 500.
Exactly. So, but the problem, and that's just my issue with it. The problem is Bruce Pearl has these players that are good. They have their own way of being good. They can't shoot at a high level, and the offense, it hurt them, and it
I'm
failed
real. That's
them.
What scares me so much about next year. I'm not as optimistic about next
either.
Season as Ty
either.
The Tiger is.
Next year is going to be – it very well could be good. I know Auburn has some guys coming in.
I think they're a tournament team right now.
Yeah.
But there's a really important player that's more than likely not going to be on this team next year.
Well, and
I'm going to be real towards the end of the year. And I know we talked about the MVP of this team, whether is it Walker Kessler or Jabari Smith. At one point this year, it was obviously Walker Kessler. And then his game and the offense got completely taken out at the end of the year.
Yep.
And the MVP of this basketball team is Jabari Smith. And that player is not going to be here next year, more than likely. I know he hasn't made his decision yet, but he's a potential number one overall draft pick. And if he's not here, I mean, this team is missing something extremely significant in their offense. And just look at what happened last night when he and Walker Kessler were borderline absent from the scoring sheet. And that's not me taking a shot at either of those two guys, but just look at what happens to this team that was front court centered. What happens to this team when you don't get the production from your two best players? People may be thinking, man, this guy's not really saying anything special. Duh. What happens when your two best players don't play well? You're going to lose probably. Yeah, duh. I know that. I get that 100%. And that's just the truth. Guess what? Auburn's best player is not going to be there next year. Who are they going to replace him with? There's the transfer portal, right? Like, I imagine Auburn's going to hit the transfer portal, and Ty the Tiger saying Walker Kessler is going to come back.
I haven't heard that.
Let's see what happens there. You know, I think he's got a chance to be a first-round pick, right? And I think he's going to get – I think he and Jabari Smith both are going to get – and this is not me taking a shot at this coaching staff either. This is just there are better coaches in the NBA. It's just the reality of it. There are coaches in the NBA that are going to help take Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith's game to another level – and you're going to get better coaching at that level, and you're going to have a chance to get your strengths pulled out, right? It's going to be a completely different scenario for them in the league. I think it's probably a smart decision for both of those guys to go and make it to the league, especially with the money that could be coming their way. And I think they're going to be a couple of teams in the NBA that are definitely very excited, especially with Jabari Smith. And I think also for Walker Kessler, they're going to be very excited to have those guys join their organization.
Well, those guys are going to go to the NBA and get developed. That's what they're going to do. Auburn.
Not saying that Auburn doesn't do that, because
no.
I think they do develop players. There's plenty of a track record with Auburn developing players.
But not at the level they're going to get. Especially being so young, the NBA is going to shape them into unbelievable talent and unbelievable players, I believe. So, not saying that Ty the Tiger was wrong on his phone call. I have not heard anything about Walker Kessler coming back. He very well might. He very well may leave. I think it really depends on where his
draft board is. But even if Kessler does leave, or let's say Kessler stays, right? Let's say he stays. So, you've got two guys coming in on scholarship, right? You're losing two guys off of scholarship. So, we're, you know, what else are you able to add to this team?
Yeah.
Because you lose Preston Cook and you lose Jabari Smith.
Yep.
And then you've got two guys already signed to you right now. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong here, but is there a scholarship that's not being used right now on Auburn's basketball team?
Not that I know of, but I don't know that situation.
So if there's at max, there may be one more scholarship. If Walker Kessler returns, at max, there may be just one more scholarship that they have to work with. If Walker Kessler leaves, there's for sure at least one scholarship left to work with, right? Because you're losing three guys that were on scholarship, Kessler, Cook, and Smith. You're losing those three guys right there. You could go and replace that with somebody in the transfer portal in addition to the two guys you got coming in, and Trey Donaldson and Chance Westry. But those two guys are backcourt guys. Where's the position on this team that has the most players right now when you look at next year's roster breakdown? It's the backcourt, right? You need somebody that can fulfill. You need a wing, man. I'm going to be real. And we can talk about this later, what Auburn needs next season. You need either somebody that can be a three or you need a four for next year. Desperately, that is what Auburn needs. And I know Jalen Williams is going to be the centerpiece for this team next year. At least that's the way that Bruce was talking about it. I think I saw a quote that says he's excited to build this around Jalen next year. You know, if Jalen ends up playing the five or the four, I think he can play either of those, and I think he's probably going to end up being the five, especially if Walker Kessler doesn't come back. That makes it all the more important that you find somebody that can stretch the floor like Jabari Smith did, that has a little bit of size, that can play on the wing, because I'm going to be honest with you. Right now, that does not exist on Auburn's basketball team. Why? Because your two wings have just not taken any steps forward. Allen Flanagan and Devin Cambridge have not taken any steps forward to be significant threats from a scoring option out on the perimeter, or really anywhere for that matter. And so Auburn's got to go find that. I think that's their number one need in the transfer portal. And if they go and get that, if they go and pull something like Arkansas did when they went and got J.D. Notte, and I know he's a primary ball handler, but if Auburn were to go and find a J.D. Notte-like addition to this basketball team, and once again, not talking about a primary ball handler here, I'm talking about somebody that maybe you could get out on the wing that could score the basketball for you, this team all of a sudden, I think, does take a step forward for next year and becomes a little bit more dangerous. But I'm interested to know what the scholarship situation is going to look like next year and what they can actually feasibly do in the transfer portal, assuming that nobody leaves off of this team too, which at this day and age, not saying that anybody's unhappy with their situation at Auburn, but just, you know, in this day and age, guys leave.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. We'll continue to break down Auburn basketball losing to Miami in the round of 32. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. Breaking down Auburn basketball, losing to Miami in the round of 32 last night, 79-61. And I do want to say this. Yes, Auburn played horrible. They played really, really bad. And they played like the team I've known them to be. But Miami played extremely well on both sides of the ball. They played Auburn defensively to perfection. They did exactly what you're supposed to do against Auburn. Played tight on the guards. Shut down the front court. They got Walker Kessler in early foul trouble. He was basically non-existent. Jabari Smith didn't shoot well at all. But Miami on the offensive end, dude, they shot really, really well. They shot 48%. From the field, 32 of 66. They shot 20% from three, but that's not really their go-to. 80% on free throws. They had 19 assists to only 4 turnovers. That's where it was. They didn't turn the ball over. They assisted on their shots. They shot almost 50% from the field. I remember saying to myself in the first half, especially the first, 10 minutes of the game, where Miami was just shooting lights out, making everything, I said, they can't do this all game. But they did. They did it all game long. And Auburn couldn't stop it. They put up 79 points. And Auburn only scored 61. That's 20 under their average for the season.
To be fair, you look at all the layups that they missed, some of which were contested, but they were bunnies. Let's just be real.
But that's not the first time that's happened this year. Our guards can't make layups at times.
I'm not talking about the guards. I'm talking about Smith and Kessler.
Yeah.
They did, and I'm not throwing shade. There's people out there, once again, saying that some people are above reproach on this. They missed bunnies last night. Let's be real.
They did.
They missed gimmies. They missed, you know, whatever euphemism you want to say for it. They missed easy layups last night, point blank range, and couldn't get it to drop. And that does happen sometimes. Just unfortunately for Auburn, it happened in the round of 32 and sent them home early against a team that was definitely not nearly as talented as they were. You can't do that. You got to make those shots. But nobody made the easy ones last night. They made it more difficult on themselves by not thriving in the lane. And Auburn definitely had a paint advantage going into it, and they didn't succeed in that whatsoever. And I don't know what was going on, but they're just missing easy layups.
Well, we've seen it over the last couple of games that Auburn has gotten away from using their front court, using what they have best and what they have the advantage with Jabari and Walker
Last couple
Kessler.
Of games? I think it's been all year.
I know, exactly, but it's been even worse. But just look at the shooting performances, just from the starters, okay, just the starters. KD Johnson, 4 of 10. Jabari, this is the bad one, 3 of 16. He was off. He was off all night
long. I'm
not mad
at KD's 4 of 10. I don't think that's horrible.
No, but I'm talking Jabari going 3 of 16. Yeah. You knew it. You knew when he shot the ball it wasn't going in. He wasn't right. He was off all game. He was even missing free throws, and he doesn't miss free throws. Like, he's one of the better free throw shooters in the country when he calms down and shoots. Flanagan, 2 of 7. Zeb Jasper, 1 of 4. Walker Kessler, 0 for 6. I mean, that's – you're going to lose, man. You're going to lose when your starters shoot that bad, and you have two guys on the bench that – scored the same or more than your starters. Like, I mean, that's not a winning formula, Noah. It's not a winning formula. And Auburn loses to Miami 79-61. They are heading home. They had a chance to play Iowa State in the Sweet 16. They weren't even going to have to play Wisconsin. They were going to play Iowa State in the Sweet 16, but they couldn't even beat Miami. If you have an opinion on this game or anything else going on, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Noah, we have a couple more minutes before the bottom of the hour. Let me ask you this. Where does Auburn go from here? I mean, where do you go after this season, which was no doubt a disappointment?
It's hard to peg what Auburn can do as far as talent acquisition a day after the season ends. We got to see if anybody transfers. Not saying that we should want that. Not saying that I'm advocating for that. You also got to see what guys take the jump to the next level. It's just the reality of college basketball in this day and age that people transfer. Let's see if anybody outside of the expected departures happen, because that's going to free up an extra scholarship or two. But right now, Max, you might have one scholarship to play with in addition to the guys that you've got signed out of the backcourt in Chance Westry and Trey Donaldson. And I think what this team maybe needs the most is a wing presence. I like the front court well enough moving forward. I need somebody who can fill it up from the wing.
Let's take a break. We're going to have Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports when we come back. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. 30 minutes in. If you've missed anything, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. It'll be uploaded immediately following our show at 4 o'clock. But we have Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports with us now. Jeremy, welcome.
What's going on, guys? How are y'all today?
I think you know how we're feeling today, Jeremy. I think you know the answer to that question. So,
was the writing on the wall?
Yes.
About Auburn. I mean, I think it was. I think it was the crane kick curse. Auburn got involved with the crane kick. After that, they went 7-5. Alabama got the crane kick. Half their team got hurt in football, lost the national title game. We shouldn't. I think the crane kick, just ban the crane kick.
I like it.
For sports eternity.
Yeah, I like that idea, because you're right. Whenever any team started doing it, it all went downhill from there. But Jeremy, I want to talk to you about some news I saw today from Alabama football. Nick Saban said he is not signing a quarterback for the 2023 class until Arch Manning decides where he's going to school. What do you think about that?
I didn't see that, so I'm going to assume you're not joking. But Alabama's got a deep quarterback room. One of their guys just went off the board anyways, committed to Tennessee today, which a lot of people thought was the kid that signed the massive NIL deal with an NIL collective from a school that could pay him up to $8 million. So, you know, it's about to heat up, because just like the NFL, over the last, since 2014, 2015 or so, you have to have solid quarterback play to win a national title. Even Stetson Bennett had a heck of a game versus Alabama in the national championship. If you don't have a good quarterback, a very above average, very serviceable quarterback, It's going to be tough to win. For example, Auburn for the last 3 years under Bo Nix. So it's going to be tough to win a lot of games when that happens. And so teams are going to be bidding for quarterbacks. Alabama's probably going to find a way to with NIL to make sure that Arch Manning can come there. The same with Texas and Georgia and everybody else that Arch Manning is looking at. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. But there's like four or five really good quarterbacks in this class, and I think there's probably some drop-off. So if you're not going to get a good one, you might can stack up on some other positions.
Speaking with Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports, I want to go back to basketball for a little bit.
Please.
Because March Madness. Well, we're going to talk about Alabama basketball first.
Please.
And then we'll talk about some Auburn basketball. But I do want to get your thoughts on how the Alabama Crimson Tide season came to an end, of course. Friday for Alabama was not a happy day, but you hate how it went down with the injury to Quinterly. But you hear some stuff after the game that Nate Oates had to say, and I'm sure you know what I'm alluding to here about talking
right.
about voluntary shoot-arounds and things like that, and who all showed up. Kind of what are your thoughts on what Nate Oates had to say after the game, and then thoughts on the overall performance?
Well, I thought it was a tough out for JQ, and I'm one of the ones that will say. It's not a guarantee that if JQ plays the whole game, Alabama wins. I'm not saying that. But what I have been saying on this show for the last month and a half is that JQ is the only player on Alabama's roster who can swing the game from one direction to the other. So if you got average JQ or below average JQ like you got for 75% of the year, the outcome was going to probably be the same. But if Javon Quinterly could put three of those Javon Quinterly games together, Alabama could have won some games in this tournament. Maybe just one because Texas Tech was sitting there waiting. But Alabama fans know, at least the ones that follow basketball, they knew that Javon Quinterly was the one that could have swung the postseason for Alabama. So once he went down, you knew there was no X factor lingering out there that could really change the outcome of the game. Still no defensive adjustments for the kid from Notre Dame, Ryan, or whatever his name was, that hit all the shots. The guy scored one bucket in the first half against Texas Tech. The guy almost put 40 on Alabama. So it's just one of those nights, too. The same night that Auburn felt last night when I think four of Miami's starters combined for like 50 of their points. So, not a lot of bench scoring last night either, but one of those nights for Alabama where, one guy really did beat you and you had a team of probably some guys that didn't play mentally tough, that didn't give enough energy, and by the end of the year, they're probably just ready to mail it in, and you're going to start seeing that a lot more, I think, with NIL and transfers and one-and-dones. Like, that almost feels like 95% of the college basketball season is meaningless anyways because – you can win as many games as you want to in the regular season. If you get bounced in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, your whole season is forgettable. And we talked about it last week. Alabama has the best wins in college basketball. They've beaten some really good teams. They've beaten one-fourth of the Sweet 16, and they get bounced on the opening day of the tournament, or at least game one of the tournament. So, for Alabama, you leave the season scratching your head because you felt like you had talent. You looked at times that you could beat anybody in the country. In fact, you did beat almost anybody in the country at times. And I think you're going to see heavy roster turnover. Alabama's contacting transfers left and right from what you see on message boards. And they've got a good recruiting class coming in. So the future still looks bright. But Nate Oates is going to have to come in next year and win some games. Because you can say all you want that Alabama made the tournament for the first time, back-to-back years and first time in 20 or so years or whatever. But when you have as much talent as Nate Oates is going to have next year, the round of 32 is not going to be good enough because the basketball is based on what players you have. And that's why Avery Johnson's gone, because Avery Johnson had a roster full of guys that were Sweet 16 or better, and he couldn't get them to play well. Nate Oates comes right in and takes that roster to the Sweet 16. It's about what you do with the players on the roster. And Alabama and Auburn kind of sitting in the same boat. Now, I'm at the end of the year scratching their head thinking, man, we had a lot of talent and we didn't make it to the second weekend or the second week of the NCAA tournament.
Talking to Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports, I'm glad you brought up the talent on the team now and recruiting because that's where I wanted to go next. What what is this Alabama team going to look like next season, the basketball team? Is anybody, do you expect anybody to leave or come back, recruiting, everything? Break it down for me. What is this team going to look like next season?
I think you're going to see you're going to see two or three guys transfer in. You're going to have a lot of spots open up. I would not be surprised if Holt was gone. I mean, Shaq's going to go pro. JQ's gone. Jaden Quinterly is gone. You have your – you're kind of looking up the recruiting class right now, if I could find it. But you have three guys that you absolutely love in the recruiting class. So you have those pieces. Chuck will be back. So you think the future is going to be bright. You have a top five recruiting class, Miller, Bradley, Griffin, Clowney, Pringle. And then you add some transfers into that mix, and Nate Oates could be sitting right where he needs to be. But Nate Oates has got to find kids, guys, that if they are going to shoot 25 to 30 threes per game, you have to find some guys that can shoot it. This team couldn't shoot it. Shaq was probably your most consistent guy, and I think he probably shot the average that Nate Oates wanted him to shoot. But Keon Ellis, bad year shooting, because Nate Oates made it sound like in the preseason that Keon Ellis was, you know, miniature Steph Curry. Like, he could go up there and light it up, and he hit like 97 out of 100 threes in practice, and the guy comes out and he doesn't do anything. So if you're going to shoot that many threes, man, you better recruit some guys and get some guys to transfer in that can fill it up. Because if you don't, it doesn't matter how good your big man play is. If you're shooting 30, if you have 35 empty possessions a game, you're not going to win.
Speaking with Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports, talking a little Alabama Crimson Tide basketball with him. Now, you and I have talked a little bit over the last couple of days about the structure of this conference moving forward, and the SEC had a terrible NCAA really tournament bad. Up to this point, and the SEC was regarded as the best conference in basketball this year. I think that was proven to be inaccurate. Arkansas is the only team left standing, so I want you to rank for me your top four head coaches in the SEC coming out of this year.
You're gonna get me in trouble. So, listen, I'm basing this off of what Musselman's done the last 2 years. He was one of the hottest teams at the end of the SEC play. I rank Mus number one. And listen, I know people are gonna say Bruce is the best coach, but man, Bruce Pearl has made it past the Sweet 16 twice in his whole career. I mean, he's been doing it 20 plus years. He just got a lifetime contract, and after he signed the contract, that Auburn finished 7-5. They have maybe the best player in basketball. I mean, people were tweeting before Auburn played Miami that Jabari Smith is better than Drew Timmy and better than everybody at Gonzaga. Heck, Auburn spent the whole year comparing, memeing Gonzaga about the gyms they play in, and you come up short on the opening weekend. Bruce is in my top three. I'm not going to put Oates in front of Bruce. I was just texting you last night, joking, Noah, but important to remember.
Dagger in last night.
No. Yeah, I was messing with you. But it's important to remember that Nate Oates is 3-3 versus Bruce Pearl. And Nate Oates came in a semi-rebuild while Bruce Pearl was in the thick of it in his tenure at Auburn. But, man, Musselman's number one. Will Wade would have been up there, but obviously he's gone, and you can credit a lot of his wins to cheating. Where do you put Cal? That's my question to you guys, is where do you put Calipari? Because if Nick Saban had the amount of talent that he has in Tuscaloosa – and won one national title in the last decade, people would be irate. They'd be furious. They'd be questioning, like, what's going on? And Calipari, I mean, geez, the guy has more talent than anybody. It's him, Duke, and North Carolina, and Kansas. And he's losing to Richmond in the first round of the NIT sometimes. He can't make it out of the first weekend of the tournament. I think Kentucky fans are upset, and rightfully so. But, man, I got Musselman one. I probably have Bruce Pearl at number two in conference, tied with maybe Rick Barnes, maybe Barnes and Oates tied at three or so. And if you gave Calipari Arkansas's roster, I mean, would they be in the Sweet 16 right now? I don't know, because he had a better roster than Arkansas, and he's still not there, and he quite frankly hasn't. He's underachieved at Kentucky. So, I mean, what are you guys top four? Top five.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would put, right now, I think it's hard to not put Eric Musselman from Arkansas at number one because of what he's doing compared to the rest of the SEC. I would put Mus at one. I'd put Bruce at two, and then probably a tie with Rick Barnes and John Calipari at three would be my top.
What makes you put Bruce at two? I just want to know, like, your criteria, Bruce, he made a Final Four. But is the Final Four the end-all? It's one more game than the Elite Eight.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Like, no, I agree.
It's a mighty difficult game to do. A lot of people can't get there.
Yeah.
No, I get it. It's 100%. He got hot, won a bunch of games, had a good team that year. But it's so hard to talk about college basketball because it's such a postseason game. But you also, it's so hard to look at the big picture of everything as well. I would say, look, I'm not arguing with Bruce at two. I have Muss at one. I have Bruce at two. I was just trying to figure out y'all's criteria for Bruce being at two.
Yeah, I think my criteria, and he should be the number one coach, but
degree of difficulty, maybe?
As we've seen last night, he gets out-coached, and there's times where his team's underperformed. That's why he's not number one in my book. But the fact that he has brought a program from Auburn that was dead in the water and has them at least competing on the national stage, I think has to be.
He also owns Rick Barnes.
Yes,
so let's just be fair, and he competes with Calipari, and he's done really well against Kentucky over the last couple of years. Nate Oates is the one coach in the league, along with Musselman, who have kind of had Bruce's number in their matchups.
Yeah, listen, I have Bruce at two. I mean, I'm not arguing that. I have Oates at four. I have Rick Barnes at three. Rick Barnes has a model of consistency over the last, bit of basketball history.
I think you could drop Rick Barnes maybe a little bit lower. I don't know. I'm not sold on Nate Oates yet, but...
There's only like five coaches left in the SEC, man. Everybody else got fired.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
You're not really ranking 14 right now. But when Chris Beard gets into the SEC, does he immediately jump up into the top two?
You can make that argument. You definitely can make that argument. And that's going to make the SEC even tougher with Texas and Texas Tech moving in. I hadn't even really thought about that until you just now brought it up. That makes it even more difficult for the SEC to be elite conference. But we had the conversation about Calipari last week once Kentucky lost. I think we had that conversation on Friday.
Good times.
Back when we were confident in our own basketball teams. But we said that firing John Calipari was not the move for Kentucky. Do you agree with that, Jeremy?
Well, listen, you can't fire the guy. The guy has a lot of talent. Kentucky basketball is driving the revenue at Kentucky. Make no mistake about it. But I'm just saying if Kirby Smart didn't win the Natty this year with his amount of talent, he would be not on the hot seat, but people would be frustrated. I think that's how Kentucky basketball fans feel about Coach Cal. He's recruiting his tail off. He has a lot of talent. You probably think that he gives you the best chance to win with the talent that he can bring in, but eventually he's going to have to bring home another crown. And I think you look at a lot of stuff when you rank coaches. Recruiting, I mean, Nate Oates right now, he's in my top three, probably top four, edging the top three, just based off of the guys that he can get on campus to help himself win games, short tenure in SEC championship, regular season, and tournament championship, Sweet 16, lost to a team that went to the Final Four in UCLA. But he's got something to prove next year, too. So, I mean, you got to take all the data. And next year, I think, is a year for Nate Oates. You got the talent. You're going to get some transfers in. You're going to be able to prove if you're a top three coach in the SEC. And I think he knows that because we heard a lot of stuff about Alabama this year. No energy. We're not practicing well. And the voluntary shoot around, man, those guys shoot so many basketballs. And I think Brian Pasek tweeted it out. It's not really what you think it is. Like, they didn't show up. The guys have been traveling. They've played 35 or so games or whatever it is. I mean, a voluntary shoot around after you probably already shot 100 balls that day. I mean, how many balls can you shoot before, you break out of a slump? Alabama basketball was what Alabama basketball was this year. Very frustrating. Style of play did not match up with the amount of buckets that were going through from deep. And it all came to a screeching halt against Notre Dame, a team that was really hot when you played them.
Jeremy, we appreciate your time today, man. Hope you have a good week, and we will talk to you next time, okay?
Thanks, guys. Listen, don't hold your heads. Auburn is still the better basketball program in the state, so don't freak out. But there are some people that are going to rub it in on you today. But it's not going to be me, so y'all take care.
All right, appreciate it, Jeremy. That was Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports. Let's take a break before we wrap up hour number one here on the line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. We just got off the phone with Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports. If you've missed any of hour number one, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcasts. Once the show is over, we'll upload it there. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Just search On the Line. Noah, we have just a few more minutes before we get out of here for hour number one. There's been a lot of NFL news going on recently. A lot of quarterbacks moving different places. Of course, we talked about Deshaun Watson last week, and you gave us your 2 cents on your Cleveland Browns. But just today, we've had three major moves go down. Matt Ryan traded to the Indianapolis Colts for a whopping third-round pick. Shows what his career is in. Jameis Winston.
Don't be hating on Matt Ryan. I like that dude.
I do too, but he got traded for a third round pick.
The whole Falcons football team's worth a third round pick.
I know.
Literally, because Matt Ryan is the entire Falcons football team. But other than Patterson.
He is now on the Colts. The Falcons went after Marcus Mariota. They have officially signed him as their new quarterback, which take that as you will. He's decent. It's not horrible. He's decent. Is he better than Matt Ryan? I don't know. Maybe. And then Jameis Winston is now back with the Saints. You liked that one a lot better than I did. I don't think Jameis Winston is all that, but you think he's all right.
It's all about the players around him, right? But the question is, can he get back to a semblance of who he was when he was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? And I don't mean that in terms of the interceptions, but if you look at the year where he had 30 TDs, 30 picks, over 5,000 passing yards, right? When you look at that year, if you cut those interceptions in half, the Buccaneers win 3 or 4 more games, and they're a playoff team, and Jameis Winston's probably not in Tampa Bay anymore. Now, the problem is, that's a big if. Can you cut those interceptions in half? But he was a lot better in New Orleans this past year, and he won games. And I think Jameis Winston is a serviceable starting quarterback in the NFL. Is he great? No. He's good some days, and other days he's checked down Charlie. Other days he can't hit the side of a wall if he was throwing a football at it from 2 feet away. I mean, like, that is very possible with Jameis Winston, right? But the reality is he does give you chances to win football games. I think he's very capable. He's still in good health, right? He's younger, you know, than a lot of quarterbacks out there that you could have gone after, like a Matt Ryan, you know what I mean? I just think when you break it down, you could do a lot worse than Jameis Winston. You're going to get him at an affordable price. And let's just be real. There aren't many quarterbacks out there that are available that can just change the outlook of your franchise, that can win despite the talent around you, right? Is Jameis Winston really any different than a lot of the quarterbacks available out there that need good talent around them? No. So there's something to be said for continuity and a guy knowing your offense and a guy having relationships with the people inside your organization.
That's fair.
Bring the guy back. Continue to build around him. Not necessarily making him the centerpiece, but you need good players to succeed in the league at spots other than just quarterback. And the reality is, as much as you may want your favorite team to go out and get a Russell Wilson or somebody like that or an Aaron Rodgers, those guys just don't come around. You've got to go and get talent around players like Jameis Winston. I think you could do a lot worse.
I mean, all the good ones are gone, right? All the great ones are already signed and going somewhere else. Let me ask you this before we head to break. Where does Baker Mayfield go now?
Oh, man, I don't know.
I don't know either.
The Falcons, the Panthers?
Maybe. That's it for hour number one. We'll be back for hour number two. You're listening to On the Line.
Are On the Line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. Monday, March 21st, as the NCAA tournament rolls on. Auburn, of course, not in it anymore. They were bounced in the first weekend. Yeah, in case you didn't know. I know, breaking news, I know. In case you didn't know, Auburn got beat last night, Noah.
No way!
Yes,
like
I did.
From the Wedding Singer.
Yeah.
You know, they're all in the plane, and Adam Sandler, Robbie, I think is his name in that movie, is telling them the story about Glenn and I can't remember, Drew Barrymore or whatever's going on there. And they're like, and you know, you got Billy Idol. They're like, no way. Right.
Yep, there's your breaking news, folks. We're here all day now. No, that's it. But
that is a great film. Yeah, I love that movie.
That is a good movie. I've seen that in a long time. That's a good movie.
It's extremely quotable.
Yeah, that is. It's good. But welcome in. You're listening to On the Line. If you want to give us a call about anything going on in the sporting world, give us a call. Tell us what's on your mind. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Noah, let's start, as we always do, in hour number two with Making Headlines.
Making Headlines.
Well, of course, the first headline of the day, unfortunately, Auburn basketball loses to Miami 79-61 in the round of 32. Auburn is bounced. They are out of the NCAA tournament. Your thoughts on the game last night, my friend?
I'm going to start off by saying this. Just from the feelings on social media, which are not an indicator of the entire fan base, but I think people need to chill out a little bit, both sides. I'd hate to see football feelings just roll into basketball. I don't want that type of culture.
There's two different Auburn Twitters. There's football Auburn Twitter and there's basketball Auburn Twitter. And last night we saw football Auburn Twitter come out extremely bad. I felt the ramifications of that.
And all season long, we dealt with people saying that this team was above reproach, or we looked at how people saw this team. They're like, ah, they're going to figure out. And granted, I was that at one point, and I know I've seen some people with sentiments out there, and I'll say this. You're entitled to believe what you believe. You're entitled to feel what you feel. You know what I mean? Yada, 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 right? But I do think it's fair to say that this team was Jekyll and Hyde, and that there was one Auburn team this year that was capable of winning it all, and there was another Auburn team that was capable of losing to anybody in the country. And Auburn's team that showed up last night was the team that was capable of losing to anybody. And we saw, unfortunately, that team far too many times down the stretch for it to be ignored. And I think that's kind of why there wasn't a whole lot of optimism going into the tournament other than just believing and hoping that something was going to turn around, right? Because you knew how talented they were. And that was my stance for the entire time. Remember what I said to you? I said, look, I won't start panicking or being dejected about this team until I see them play in a tournament setting. And what happened in the SEC tournament? They played bad. And then, so I started to worry a little bit for what was going to happen in the NCAA tournament. I said on Friday, look, Jacksonville State, I don't think it was a fluke. I think that was exactly what Auburn should have done to Jacksonville State. And they did it. But the thing is, what did I say? I said the NCAA tournament is a marathon, not a sprint, and every game is different. Just because you did well in the Friday game had no bearing on whether or not you were going to do well in the next one, and then the one after that, and then the one after that. So I think that when you look at it, Auburn just they didn't adjust last night. Bruce Pearl was quoted on – I saw this on Twitter. Tom Green tweeted this out last night. This was post-game Bruce. Bruce Pearl on what Miami did to limit Jabari and Walker. Quote, if I knew, I probably could have prevented it. I didn't have the answers.
And that's really not what you want your head coach to be saying. I'm going to be completely honest with you, man.
But to be fair to the coaching staff, okay, and I do think it's fair to, you know, just breaking this down, okay, and talking about coaching, that's kind of the direction that I want this to go, right? Because I don't think people understand the profession, okay, and I don't think people understand, you know, the difficulties of it, and they think that it's just like, oh, that they have all the answers, and that all of these coaches, that a great coach is an infallible coach, that a great coach never makes mistakes, or that a great coach, you know, embodies all things, you know, program building, motivating, and all these different things, that they don't have shortcomings in specific areas of coaching. There's many different types of coaches. There's different archetypes of coaches, right? I mean, there's your Vince Lombardis out there who are incredible motivators, and then there's your strategist out there that changed the game entirely, right? There's in basketball, I think there are motivators slash program builders, and then there's your X's and O's guys who maybe aren't as good at recruiting, but I actually have a lot of respect for what they can do in game and what type of abilities they can draw out of their own players, you know, developers in that way, but maybe they're not the best at recruiting. And unfortunately, you know, for Auburn sometimes, I do think the area in which that Bruce Pearl is strongest at is, and I've said this for a while, this is not something that I've just said this year, Unfortunately, you know, some people may come in now and be like, you're only saying that now, but I've thought this for a while. You can look at instances in Bruce Pearl's time where I think you can say that he maybe lacks a little bit, and maybe the you know, game management and for maybe lack of terminology. I think sometimes he can get outcoached as far as X's and O's are coined, but I do think he is one of the best, if not the best, program builders and recruiters and motivators in the Southeastern Conference. And that's exactly why I think he's the right man for the job. That's exactly why I think he should be Auburn's head basketball coach. That's why I think he's been incredibly successful at Auburn, because he did something that no coach could do before him. He got dudes in. He recruited this program. He's built this program to what it's at. And so I don't want people to think that you're putting down a coach or that you're just dragging these guys through the mud or something like that, when you literally point something out that is objective, that is objectively true, right? That is something that you have seen in trends since he's been the head coach at Auburn. And it's just the reality of it. And I don't mean for, you know, people to, you know, take that any kind of way. I think he's a great coach. But great coaches even have areas where they lack and that they struggle. And I think this is an area that we have seen from Bruce Pearl a few times through his time at Auburn and at Tennessee, where, you know, he can bring in great talent, but sometimes there are instances like this. And I think the end of this Auburn season, this coaching staff really found a hard time, really found it difficult to adjust to things that opponents were doing.
If you have an opinion on Auburn basketball, anything else going on, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you. Here's the thing, okay? When you break it down like that, I get it, okay? I do. But at what point can you – let me say it this way. It's hard for me to feel bad for the Auburn coaches when they get out-coached, and then when they go to the post-game press conference and Bruce Pearl says – I don't know. I didn't know how to fix it. Like, that just...
He's also not going to throw his players under the bus. Well, you can't take everything you can't take everything as, like, 100% truth, or that's what they meant in a press conference setting. Especially after they just had their hearts taken out.
Yes,
right?
But not just in the press conference, but even in the game, it obviously showed they were not ready for Miami, but Miami was ready for Auburn. Miami was 100%... ready to go, game plan, like, right down the middle. They knew exactly what they were going to do.
And they executed it.
And they executed it to perfection. They played Auburn better than most have this season. They really did. And Auburn just kind of put their hands up. They were like, well, I don't know what did I...
And we've seen that a few times.
They did the Ricky Bobby, I don't know what to do with my hands, you know? And we've seen that. That's not the only case we've seen that. That has been happening this season for... however long I've been talking about it.
There was a helplessness to Auburn last night, and it's the same helplessness that I talked about in the Texas A&M game when Auburn lost in the SEC tournament.
Yep.
The look on their faces of that they didn't know what was going on, nor did they know what to do.
And
they just kept doing what they were doing, and it eventually, it
and it obviously didn't work. And they were trying to get out of it. They were trying to shoot their way out of it. And this team cannot shoot their way out of it and shoot themselves
sometimes
back in.
Sometimes they can.
Can they,
sometimes
though?
Sometimes they can.
I don't think they can. And here's the problem, man. I love Auburn, and I want Auburn to be great. And they can be great. Bruce Pearl is still the right man for the job. Let's get that clear.
I don't even think we need to even talk about that.
No,
you
exactly.
Know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. That doesn't even need to be in the conversation. What does need to be in the conversation is how this team was the exact same team that I've been talking about since the beginning of February, even since the Oklahoma game back in late January. After that point, this team, they took their dip, and then they never came back. And that was just where they were. That was the team they were. And I know you talked about how you wanted to wait and give this team some time, and then you talked about how you would worry once they hit the SEC tournament, and then they struggled, and then you started to worry once the SEC tournament happened. Dude, I've been on this since February, man. I've seen this team.
You forget who talked about this first. I talked about this back in January. I did say this back in January.
I
just said it's not time to panic.
Yeah, well, and here's the problem, okay? This team and any other team that has struggles during the season, they can make changes and get better throughout the year. And I was really hoping Auburn would do that, but they never did. Auburn never made those changes. They never got any better. They did the exact same thing every single ball game. And sometimes it worked against weaker opponents, but then when they played decent teams who played good defense, they got exposed. And they didn't change anything about how they how they prepped, how they practiced, how they played, and it showed. And Auburn struggled. Obviously, they struggled, and they didn't get any better. And I knew they weren't going to get any better. I hoped they would, and especially after I watched them play JSU on Friday, I was like, okay, if this Auburn team shows up in the tournament, they can beat anybody. I tweeted it out. I said, if this Auburn team shows up, they can beat anybody. But the team that played last night and showed up last night against Miami in the round of 32, that's the team that I've been talking about. That's the team that I've seen play basketball for the last 2 months, and I knew it was coming. I didn't want it to. I wanted this team to change and get better, and that's got to be on the coaching staff because you got to develop. You got to change it up. When it doesn't work, what do? You change it. You don't just throw it out there and hope it works when it doesn't, when it's been proven that it didn't work. Let's head to the phone lines, though, 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. We have a caller. Welcome in.
Hey, this is Brett from Beauregard.
Brett, how you doing?
Hey, doing good. On the thing about what Bruce Pearl said, Pearl knew what the answer was, but Auburn didn't have the answer.
Saying they didn't have the personnel to do it, didn't have the players to do it.
When Flanagan got hurt and then came back and with no confidence, that took away a ball player who could not only hit from outside, which everybody acts like that's their biggest problem. Auburn had four guys, if you count Jalen Williams, who could put the ball on the floor and go get a shot. As good as Jabari is, that right there is his main thing that he's got to get better at. He's a guy who's going to hang out there on the wing, get the ball, maybe take a dribble or two. His second dribble is very loose. We've seen it all year. And, you know, my God, I'm not knocking the guy. He's going to be probably third in the draft and make millions of dollars. But four guys, and normally you only have two on the court at one time, pretty much makes your offense stagnant unless you're just really scoring off defense or, you're just draining threes left and right.
Which neither of those things Auburn could do.
Yeah, Miami had the talent to defend Auburn, and not many teams would have had that. Duke would have been another team that Auburn would have struggled against because of their athletic ability. As far as next year goes, Auburn actually only has 11 true scholarship players on the roster. So you get the two that are coming on board, but then if Walker goes, you're going to have at least two that you can sign. And most likely one of those three, Cambridge, Akinbola, or Moore, is going to leave. And very well connected poster on one of the sites, I don't know if y'all have seen it, has been saying that Wes Flanagan might be getting a head coaching job. So if that happens, they're saying that Flanagan might go as well. But even if he doesn't, if he does come back, I think Flanagan will be more of the player that he was last year.
Yeah,
I haven't seen any of the reports about Flanagan getting a job. It very well might. He might get a job. That would be interesting, and I think you could possibly see Flanagan or Alan Flanagan go with his dad if he does get a head coaching job somewhere. Again, I haven't seen anything about that. Doesn't mean it's not true. Doesn't mean you're wrong. I'm just saying I haven't seen that yet. But my opinion would be I think Alan Flanagan would probably go with his dad if he went to a decent school. You know what I'm saying? Nothing like super small, but I think Alan Flanagan would probably go with his dad, but he might stay.
Oh, yeah.
You never know.
But either way, Auburn would go from having four guys who can take the ball and take you off the bounce to six right away because both of these guys coming in can put the ball on the floor. I mean, a lot of people, they say Westry, he's a four-star. Well, he's two slots from being a five-star. I think he was rated 30.
Oh, he's good. He's the real deal.
And people look into the stars and ratings way too much.
He's not a great outside shooter, but he can hit the outside shot. But he definitely is a person who can put the ball on the floor, and he also can defend. But, and another thing, Auburn, if Kessler and Jabari leave, they'll get a good forward, and they'll get a good center if that's what they go after, because of the success Bruce Pearl's had with transfers. And a lot of people forget, sometimes if you get a guy who's – he might not be the better NBA prospect, but he actually can do better in the college game. Prime example, Colin Sexton, when he left, I don't care what anyone says, Kyra Lewis was a better college player because he could penetrate and hit the open man, where Sexton was not real good at that.
Well, to go on your transfer point about Auburn and Bruce Pearl, the transfer portal is going to be Auburn's best friend in the next few months. I think they are
every season.
Just that's just how the transfer portal has evolved, and Auburn is going to use it to their advantage. And I agree. I think Bruce Pearl him and his staff know what to look for when it comes to the transfer portal. I actually had a chance to talk to Stephen Pearl about the transfer portal a few weeks ago, and he talked about his process of how they go through the portal and they look at different guys and of how they have to fit the system perfectly before they even reach out to them. So Auburn is going to use the transfer portal, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. I look for them to get three guys. And, you know, I'm sorry, but I know y'all have him on every week, but the guy just a little while ago when he says that Keon Ellis shot 36.6% from three. If somebody doesn't think that that's good, I don't know what they think is good. I mean, please remember, Shackelford has never shot 35%, but yet he was preseason All-SEC. I mean, Keon Ellis could shoot the three.
Yeah, he was pretty good. I think he was a little streaky. I think he was a little streaky.
So was Shackelford.
Yeah, they were all top. You're 100%.
So was Bryce Brown. So was Jared Harper. I mean, that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
You roll with it. Y'all have a great day.
You too, Brett.
Brett, we appreciate the call.
He did shoot 37%.
Yeah.
Keon Ellis did. Yeah.
Really? Interesting.
Last year he shot 39%.
I mean, that's that's pretty solid, man.
Looking at the Auburn roster, okay, just talking about scholarship usage and whatnot, and I've broken down through these segments and whatnot. 9 of 13 at the moment, assuming nobody transfers. At the moment, and this is also assuming that Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler go to the NBA, at the moment, you've got 9 of 13 to work with, okay? That you've
nine
got
on
scholarship.
The roster?
Yes,
okay.
That are on scholarship. So that leaves two guys that are coming in, so then you have two scholarships that you can work with moving forward. And so that...
that's got to be the portal, right?
Oh, yeah. Recruiting-wise, that's over with. Unless somebody just drops a commitment randomly or tries to get out
of
their...
there are a couple
of
LSU guys.
I don't know. I don't think that...
Just saying.
Also, I know there was the big Kentucky recruit that dropped his as well that's trying to get out of his letter. Or
oh,
whatever.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he was a five-star, one of the top players in the country.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's not happening. I don't think Auburn's reached out to him.
Probably not.
I think, you know, going along with what Brett was saying, they need to go and get a wing. You know, I know we talked about Alan Flanagan a lot there. And there's a chance, you know... Look, Babatunde at King Bala, I don't know what's in the – I don't talk to these players. I don't know what's all in their heads. But, like, there are guys like Babatunde at King Bala and Chris Moore that you wouldn't blame them if they – or, you know, I don't know.
Chris Moore for sure.
Devin Cambridge gets a lot of playing time, and Bruce loves to play him. So I don't know if that'll happen. But, like, King Bala and Chris Moore, those two guys are guys that I would understand if they wanted to go get playing time somewhere else, which is going to open you up to be able – that's going to open up two more scholarships, right? And so that's going to bring you back down to be able to potentially retool with four more players to the transfer portal. The other thing that has to work into this, we don't know when Auburn's going to take its scholarship reduction because, remember, it's like two over the next, like, whatever, 4 or 5 years or whatever that they have to do, or 8 years or whatever. I can't remember how many it was. But I know they have, like, a two scholarship reduction over that time period. And so when is Auburn going to take that? You know, because that does have to average out over a certain time period. They're going to be able to hit the portal. And they're going to have to replace a Jabari. They're going to need to go and get a stud. They need to go and get a stud wing. You asked me that question earlier. What does Auburn need to do to make this team instantly better next year, to make them a contender for the NCAA tournament? Because I don't think the backcourt's it right now. The backcourt has to develop. I think that's a big key point. The backcourt has to get better, more consistent on offense.
Has to get better.
But I would also say that a need is you need to go get a guy who can play the three that can fill it up. You need to go and get a guy who can score on the wing. That will help take this team to be a little bit more that will make this team a little bit more of a steady offensive presence next year. I think somebody that can score off the wing, whether it's shooting it or driving, whatever it may be, I would like to see the guy be able to shoot the three. They need a Mustafa Heron. I'm going to be real. To put this in Auburn terms, they need a Mustafa Heron this upcoming year. That would help make this team a lot better.
Well, they have things to fix. They have holes to fill. This team lost in the round of 32 with some of the most talent in the entire country. They've got things to fix. Can they get better? Yes. Is Bruce Pearl the man? Absolutely. That's out of the discussion. Auburn's going to lose at least one, if not two, to the NBA. they've got some holes to fill and some things to fix for Auburn basketball to get back to competing at the highest level in college basketball. Let's take a break. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goetz and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. We have some more SEC coaching news around SEC basketball. We've had a lot of coaching changes already with teams that didn't make the tournament or now a team that's in some legal trouble. LSU, of course, fired Will Wade about a week or so ago before their first round game in the NCAA tournament. They've now hired a guy. They've hired Murray State's head coach, Matt McMahon. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but
McMahon.
Whatever it is, he is now the
McMahon
new LSU.
When he sees all of those allegations.
Yeah. So Murray State's head coach at Murray State obviously made the NCAA tournament. They won their first round game and then they lost in the second round. But he is now going to LSU to be their new head coach. I'm going to be honest. That's a step up from Murray State to go to LSU, but that takes a lot of guts to go to LSU right now with the future of that basketball program.
Just doesn't make sense to me why anybody would want to go and try that, because there's going to be a rebuild. That is going to happen.
It's going to be a process, too.
There's going to be a rebuild. There's going to be, you've got this looming over you, so you don't know what types of players you're going to be able to get. I think there was a more attractive option probably down the line. If and also, like, are they devoted to you, right? Is LSU committed to you?
Is he a placeholder?
As a coach, right? Like, are you literally just coming in to brave the storm, or do they legit, like, care and want to keep you around and understanding that there's going to be some hard times through this? Like, what is the expectation? Of course, they all had their discussions with each other, and you have to make the right decision for your family, and I'm sure this is a nice pay raise.
Exactly. That I don't know what they paid him. I don't know how long his contract is. I don't think that information has come out. But if you are a guy who's the head coach at Murray State basketball and a major Division I program from the SEC in LSU gives you a call, and this is your, this is your shot to go
your
big
one
time.
One shining moment.
Exactly. This is your one shot. And I'm not saying it's his only shot, because I think he is a good coach, but when the first big school comes calling, I feel like it could be hard to turn it down. But at the same time, it is LSU, and we all know that the allegations are coming, and it's going to be pretty bad on LSU. They're going to be down and out for a while, and I don't know. I feel like if you are wanting to go and coach at LSU, I maybe would have waited until the allegations came out to see how bad it was going to be for LSU. But hey, man, good for him. He's going, and he's going to be LSU's new coach. They've hired Murray State's Matt McMahon. He will be the new head basketball coach down in Baton Rouge. We're still waiting on all the allegations to come out for LSU. The NCAA has warned them, and they've told them, like, hey, we have all of our stuff. We are coming, but we're not going to tell you what it is yet, because that's just how the NCAA works. So we'll see. Of course, they fired Will Wade. He cheated quite a bit, Noah. He cheated quite a bit.
At least that allegedly cheated quite a bit.
I mean, he's on video and recording cheating.
Still have to say allegedly.
Allegedly cheated. But, I mean, LSU allegedly cheated. They're in some hot water with the NCAA. It's coming. I don't know how bad it's going to be. I don't know how bad it's going to be at all for them. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I think it's going to be pretty ugly for LSU basketball. They also, the NCAA said they had some stuff on their football program too. So not a great time to be down in Baton Rouge waiting on the NCAA to come after you.
Then some other news over the weekend. San Francisco's coach, Todd Golden, goes to Florida.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Home run, I think.
Home
run
so?
Hire. I do. I really do. That's a home run hire, man.
You think you'll be able to recruit Florida? I'm skeptical.
I think Florida, I talked about this last week, I think Florida recruits itself in basketball. Mm. Because it's a...
Mike White would beg to differ.
Well, I think Mike White may have hurt them a little bit. But no, I think Florida's one of those programs. It's because they're a legendary basketball school. They're a legendary athletic school.
I don't know
we talked
if I go
about
so far
that.
To say legendary, they just have a reputable history.
Well, that's what I mean. And I think players and people want to go and play at the University of Florida. People want to go to school at Florida. I mean, that's the state school. That's what it is. And I think I'll be able to recruit down there. The SEC is obviously getting tougher. It helps with Florida State not being great right now in basketball. Or
I just feel like I've seen this story before, right?
He
feel
may
like
be I've the same seen, thing, yeah.
And maybe I'm seeing this at LSU right now, too, with these two coaches and who I'm seeing coming in. Mike White was this story, too. Mike White came from Louisiana Tech.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen this story before. School brings in successful mid-major coach or small conference coach in this case, because the WCC is really not a mid-major conference aside from like two teams at the top that are really actually good. But other than that, it's a pretty small conference. I mean, look at the gyms that they're playing in. Let's just be real. But, you know, I've seen teams hire this and then they just – they don't succeed beyond winning 20 games a season, maybe, right? Like, I don't know if he's ready for this stage. I think Florida, with their history, could have maybe landed somebody bigger.
They could have, but I still like the hire. I like.
I don't think it's a terrible hire. I just think it's a safe hire.
Yeah, I was shocked when Mike White left. You know what I mean? Florida recruits itself, especially in basketball, football as well. Let's head to break. We'll have Jacob Hillman on here on the line when we come back. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. Let's head to the phones now. We have our second guest of the day, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network and Weagle 91.1 FM's Sports Director. Jacob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful Monday. Obviously, could be doing better after last night, but it is a beautiful Monday on the plains.
It is. It's a nice day here in Auburn. Did you travel back from Greenville yesterday or this morning? What was your plan there?
I made it back to Auburn at 2:30 a.m. this morning from Greenville.
I can hear your voice, man. I love it. You were there. Yeah. You were loud and proud. I can hear it, man.
Yeah, I mean, well, had to let it go for the last game as a student. So
yeah, I understand it, man.
Absolutely. Well, Jacob, let's break it down, okay? Auburn, they lost in the round of 32 to Miami last night, 79-61. What'd you see there from Greenville from the Tigers?
Yeah, I think really what it was Miami's excellent game plan against Jabari Smith. Auburn was trying to get it to Jabari, and they were face guarding him. And with that, he just was not able to get going. And really, when Jabari Smith, your best player, goes 3-for-16 from the field, it's not going to happen. When your second-best player goes 0-for-6 from the field and only scores 2 points, then you're definitely going to lose. So it was just not a good game offensively for Auburn. And respect to Miami for the game plan and how they played. It was an excellent game from the Hurricanes.
And, you know, we've seen this a couple times where Auburn gets outplayed. The team comes in with a defensive mindset and a defensive plan, and they shut Auburn down. And Bruce Pearl getting outcoached. What do you think about his comments in the post-game press conference where he said, yeah, Miami, they had a game plan, and I didn't know how to fix it?
Yeah, you know, that's tough to hear, because it's something you want to hear from your coach that he was able to. But, I mean, I think it's just him being honest, is that he probably tried to make adjustments at halftime, and they didn't work. Auburn was down one, and they came out flat again in the second half and was unable to stop Miami. I thought that dunk on Jabari from the Miami guard was a big momentum shift. I think that was a point in the game where you think, oh, man, this is going to get tough for Auburn, and it did. Now, as far as the game plan goes for adjustments for Auburn, yeah, I just I don't know what to think. It's tough from Coach Pearl to say that and having to admit that.
Likewise, there's only so much you could do with your personnel. I think that's something to point out, right? Like, what you got on your team is what you got. And that's where I was kind of getting out with coaching earlier in the show. We were talking about this. I said, you know, there's a lot of people that said, why don't you just do this? I said, well, if it was really that simple, they would, right? These guys aren't trying to lose basketball games. So I do think, although I have pointed out today, I think, you know, the coaching staff maybe did get out-coached last night, and I do think it's fair to point stuff out like that. I do think some people out there may be taking it to an extreme with this coaching staff, because there's only so much that you can do. What you got's what you got, and I think Jim Larrañaga did more with what he had than what Bruce Pearl maybe had last night on the floor. At least maybe there was more options for Larrañaga last night. I want to switch gears away from basketball because we know that's what's all painting us. Let's talk about baseball. I think they did something really, really, really good this past weekend and being able to at least take one from the number one baseball team in the country, Ole Miss. Obviously, the pitching staff is depleted a little bit. I need to know about that situation, Jacob. Tell our listeners what's going on with the baseball team from an injury report standpoint, from what you know and what you can tell us. I don't want you to give us away anything that you can't tell us, but I'm just kind of curious. Where does it stand? Because it's obvious when you give up double-digit runs in two of those games. You know, Sunday clearly to me was that they ran out of arms. The bats didn't quit. The bats were present all weekend, and that's why they took – one out of three against a really good baseball team, and there's a lot of optimism for this team moving forward. But where is the arm? Where's this pitching staff at going into a road series against Texas A&M?
Yeah, as far as injuries, it starts with Joseph Gonzalez. He has that blister on his finger that he wasn't able to go this past week, and I think that's where it all compounded down from there. There's a few other injuries that we're not sure if they're going to be ready for Texas A&M. Still not sure if Gonzalez will be ready for Texas A&M either, but the hope is for him to be ready. And it really just kind of goes down from there. Now, of course, it did give Hayden Mullins the chance to go out and compete like he did on Friday night. So it was good to see that happen and being able to get a new guy in the starting rotation and pitch well the way he did and give Auburn the big win. But it also, like you said, you're depleted on Sunday because you don't have as many bullpen arms. And it just feels like the Auburn offense is there and is ready to compete with the best of them in the SEC, but the pitching staff just is having these games that are not good enough to do that because the game one and game three just is not going to get it done. Game two was awesome. Game two was great. So I look at it from the pitcher standpoint of you just got to find the consistency somewhere, and obviously getting healthy will help that, but I don't think that's the biggest factor right now.
Talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network and Wego 91.1 FM Sports Director. To stay on the Auburn baseball subject, they have South Alabama tomorrow in Montgomery, and then they travel to Texas A&M for a three-game series this weekend. What are you looking for Auburn baseball in these next four games?
Yeah, well, tomorrow, first of all, will be a great chance to go to Montgomery and play in a minor league ballpark, in a ballpark that a lot of Auburn fans will be able to travel to, in-state rivalry with South Alabama. And Auburn hasn't been in Montgomery in a few years after the Capital City Classic has been done with. But moving over to this weekend, I think Auburn needs to win at Texas A&M. I don't think Texas A&M is a bad team necessarily. They lost their series, or they won their series at LSU this past weekend. But I also think that it does not get any easier after this upcoming weekend for Auburn going forward. You're going to LSU after that. You're hosting Vanderbilt the week after that. And then you're going to Mississippi State. So this schedule is about to be grueling. And I think if you go to College Station and win this series, you're set up where you can go on these road trips, grab one, and still be in good position. And, you know, obviously Vanderbilt, that's going to be a tough one. I think Mississippi State down the road, depending on what happens with them, could be a chance to maybe get an upset road series victory because they don't look too hot this year. They lost a series at Georgia, but they also put up 20 runs yesterday. So it's going to be interesting to see. But this upcoming weekend, I want to see the offense keep rolling and do what they did this past weekend, and hopefully the pitching can find some consistency.
Speaking with Jacob Hillman, the Auburn Jungle president, was definitely cheering on his team loud and proud yesterday. I love it, man. I love it. You were a warrior yesterday, I can tell. So last question to you before we let you get out of here, and then I'm going to be real, man. Let's get you some salt water.
Okay, fine.
I'm just messing with you, man. The softball series for this team, I mean, they've got one more game today to wrap it up against South Carolina, but if you want to tell somebody what sport they should be paying attention to now that basketball is over, I definitely think you could make the argument for softball considering they're 25-2 overall.
Absolutely, and they're having a blast playing. They're having a lot of fun. Brielle's a freshman. She's hitting home runs left and right. Denver Bryant's hitting home runs and flipping the bat, having a lot of fun. And the pitching staff, Shelby Lowe and Maddie Pinta, they're just so good. I think Maddie Pinta had a record for consecutive wins in consecutive games for Auburn, like 9 consecutive wins. It was awesome. And I think that this team, getting a win tonight is crucial. Because the upcoming series, you go to Kentucky, a tough road series, and then you come home and host Florida. So you get a series win tonight, you start the season 5-1 in the SEC, and you've got a chance to make some noise in the conference. And if you do that, get in the top half of the SEC, you're going to be contending for hosting a regional. You probably got to be top six or so in the SEC to host a regional. And if you do that, you are in fantastic position for the NCAA tournament. And, hey, who knows? You never know. This team could make another run to Oklahoma City. And if they don't, this team's also very young. I expect to see the lineup be adjusted throughout the season. After the loss in game one, the lineup was majorly adjusted. Sidney Cox taken out of the lineup. Nelia Peralta was moved over to third base. Rose Roach into shortstop. And you're just seeing a lot of different players get playing time, and they step up when they do. So that's what's a lot of fun to see, is the different players get their shot and they take advantage of it.
Well, Jacob Hillman, we appreciate your time today. We're glad you made it back safe from Greenville. Go get you some water and maybe not talk the rest of the day, man.
Well, see, I don't know if that's going to be an option. So I'll drink as much water as possible because I'll be at softball. So I'm going to have to bring the noise there as well. So thanks for having me on.
Yep, no problem. Thanks, Jacob. We appreciate it. That was Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, Wiggle 91.1 FM Sports Director, and the AU Jungle President. Hey, look, man, like you said, he's a trooper. He went and
he's a warrior.
Him and a lot of Auburn fans went to Greenville, made the trip over, and they were there supporting. And I know Auburn appreciates it. The players appreciate it for sure. And I didn't make the trip because I am here with this, obviously, but I hope Hillman can get his voice back.
Hey,
because
as Dick Vitale would say, he's a BMOC, big man on campus, baby.
That's
love
awesome,
that guy.
Baby.
He is great, and he's done a lot for the Auburn student section this year to see it grow and to see how much he's done over his 4 years at Auburn. Proud to call him a good close friend of mine, and I think he's done a wonderful job with the student section and the support. I mean, Pearlville, or whatever it's called now, Jungle City, whatever we settled on with it, happened during his tenure of leadership, you know what I mean? And he's been there with it every step of the way from the beginning. And he used to be a part of that group of people getting in line, the first ones at that door, right? I mean, he's done a lot of awesome things. And so, you know, as he texts me, he says, Jungle President's voice should always be like that after a game.
And that's right.
And that is the standard that he has set. And I'm looking forward to see how the student section continues on once he moves on after this year.
Yep, absolutely. Hope he gets his voice back, because I know he does fill in and get some play-by-play for Auburn baseball and Auburn softball over on the Auburn Sports Network. So we always appreciate having him on. And I did want to say, you mentioned Dick Vitale. He is talking again. Did you see that? He is, because he was not speaking for a while. He had some vocal cord issues, getting chemo and stuff from cancer. He's now cancer-free. He's back talking, doing his thing. So I'm sure he'll be in attendance for some of the upcoming games for the NCAA tournament. So that's really good to see.
That is. That's exciting. Well, I hope he, you know, can. I know that that's something that brings him a lot of joy.
Yep.
And he brings a lot of people joy.
Exactly. He's great at what he does. He's an awesome advocate for the game of basketball. Let's take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the show on the Monday edition of On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Monday edition of the show. We are wrapping up here right before 4 o'clock. But make sure you stick around. It'll be the drive from 4 to 6 p.m. So make sure you stick around for that. I know you're not a huge fan anymore with the craziness of the MLB, Noah, but there has been some wild free agency moves going on in the last few days. So I did want to break those down and talk about it a little bit. Then we can get into some SEC college baseball before we get out of here a few minutes before 4. But of course, for all the Braves fans, this one was depressing to see. But Freddie Freeman is officially a Los Angeles Dodger. The pictures came out. He is in the uniform. It's 100%. Freddie Freeman is going to the Dodgers. That's tough. And it came down to Freddie Freeman realized how good he is. He realized that he wanted to get paid, and the Braves couldn't pay him. They didn't want to pay him that much, and I understand he wanted a lot of money. And the Dodgers said, absolutely, man, come on in. So Freddie Freeman going to the Dodgers, it hurts the Braves, because that's like the Braves' biggest rival right now. That's the team that they always have to get through when it comes to the postseason. And now Freddie Freeman is on that Dodgers team. So It's tough to see if you're a Braves fan, no doubt. Some other news from the MLB free agency world. Trevor Story, the legendary shortstop from Colorado, coming to my team, going to the Red Sox.
Legendary?
I mean, he's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Don't you have to be retired to be legendary?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's a good point. He's not legendary. He's a star. How about that? The star shortstop.
I'll give you that.
He is going to the Boston Red Sox to be...
a shortstop who can actually hit.
Yeah, a shortstop that can actually hit. And so the Red Sox signed Trevor Story. That is huge. But then, good news for Braves fans. I know Freddie Freeman is gone. Good news for the Braves. One is Ronald Acuna is back hitting bombs in spring practice. So he's back and healthy. So he'll be back in the starting rotation. But then the Braves got their closer. They got Kenley Jansen from the Dodgers. So you need a little swap, you know. Freddie Freeman goes to the Dodgers. Jansen comes to the Braves. I know it's different positions. One's probably better at what they do. But Kenley Jansen's still good.
Bad?
I mean, wasn't horrible. But Kenley Jansen's better. Kenley Jansen is better.
His age bothers me a little bit. His age worries me a little bit.
But he's still a good closer. And they didn't sign him for long. So it's just a one-year deal. So he's only there for the year. And if he does good, they may extend him. If he doesn't, they'll let him go. But that's just, those are some of the news coming out of MLB over the weekend. I know it kind of gets drowned out by all the basketball and the football news going on as well. But let's just be thankful that the MLB is actually going to play. They're actually going to start and get the games in, because for a while it did not look like it was going to happen.
That's true. I'm happy it's back. I'm still mad at the MLB though. I'm not gonna lie. Still mad.
I know you are. So let's get into the thing you actually like to talk about. SEC baseball. I know you've been keeping up a lot with it. Auburn, of course, had their series this weekend against number one Ole Miss. I was just looking at their schedule. They have like five series on the schedule that are against ranked teams in the SEC.
Hold on, though. I think some of those are manageable. I think some of those are manageable.
Okay, like who?
Mississippi State is definitely manageable.
Okay.
That is one that before the year you looked at and you said, oh, the defending national champions are back-to-back with Vanderbilt. And I'm over here now looking at the schedule. I'm like, we can work with this. I think Arkansas is manageable with the way that they're hitting this year. They're not hitting the baseball very good. I mean, that's kind of some of the things that Jacob was talking about. LSU just dropped 2 out of 3 to A&M, and they looked very good in non-conference play, and A&M did not. And you know, maybe LSU kind of resembles a little bit of the inconsistency that they had last year. I think LSU is manageable. Now, it doesn't help that it's being played in Baton Rouge, and you're about to play a lot of games away from home over these next 2 weeks. You're about to play. You only have one home game over your next 9 games.
Ooh, that's brutal.
Yeah, one of your next 9 at home.
And that's big, because you talked about...
a couple neutral sites, though.
You talked about the support of Auburn baseball at Plainsman Park this weekend. You said it was sold out. There wasn't a seat available.
On Saturday. Yeah, I was on StubHub trying to get a ticket to the game, and they were like going for $100, and I was like, yeah.
For a college baseball game, that's unbelievable.
Hard pass. That's more than what day one tickets were for the NCAA tournament. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, that's tough. But that's big for Auburn to have to go and play on the road now and have to come away from that home support.
And maybe you can – look, I'm not confident in this because we haven't seen it often, but, you know, maybe with the way that Auburn's hitting, maybe they can just take one against Vanderbilt. And maybe this team, with the way that they're hitting this year, they can avoid sweeps against the best teams. But I'm going to tell you, Kentucky went 0-3 this weekend. Winnable game. Alabama, or winnable series. Alabama, you get them at home. That is very winnable. Arkansas has already pointed out the way that they're hitting right now and the way that Auburn's hitting, that's going to be a collision course. I think that's manageable at home. Maybe you could steal that series. South Carolina got swept this week. That is a very manageable series. They have not been very good. They may be the worst team in the entire Southeastern Conference, aside from maybe in Alabama. You also break down Mississippi State with the way that they've played, and they've been up and down. Of course, they did drop 21s on Georgia yesterday, but also lost 2 out of 3. So, I mean, you just got to kind of take that in stride. But Mississippi State's more manageable than you originally thought they were. They're only a couple of games above 500 at this point. LSU's going to be really tough. I think that they are still a really good baseball team despite dropping 2 out of 3 against A&M. But A&M, I think, is a very manageable series on the road this upcoming weekend. And honestly, it's one that if Auburn has postseason aspirations, I think it's fair to say that Auburn should expect to take 2 out of 3 against Texas A&M and get back to 500 in conference play. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that if Auburn could get some of their pitching stuff in order as far as injuries are concerned, it's very feasible that Auburn could maybe take 3 out of that series. I think Auburn could sweep a South Carolina. I think there's several teams in Auburn's schedule where it's like, if this team could get pitching squared away, this team could end up being pretty good. Really, like I think they are a fringe postseason team in my mind right now. They have some work to do, but they are a fringe postseason team right now. And if they can, you know, if they can avoid some sweeps and maybe steal a series or two, which at this point there are a few that look manageable that could happen, I think that you're looking at this being one of the last teams in the NCAA tournament, and that's a great step in the right direction.
Well, with the way this team hits the baseball, there's no doubt they're going to be in most of these series. And I think the biggest thing is just don't get swept. Don't get swept by the top-level teams of Mississippi State and Vanderbilt.
And they're going to get swept at some point. You just don't want those to pile up like they did last year and get swept three times. And all of a sudden, that's – I mean, think about this.
That's nine games.
That's 0-9 going into the SEC standings, right? Like, that is 0-9 going into the SEC standings.
I mean, you can't come back from that.
No, you can't.
And so that's the biggest thing. Like you said, it is baseball, and so – will Auburn probably get swept against one of those top teams? Yeah, maybe.
But just don't let it happen three times.
Don't let it happen three times. Their bats will keep them in ball games. If they can get their pitching back up to where it needs to be, there's no doubt this team can be in the postseason. And then not just don't get swept, try to pick up a sweep or two if you can. In those opponents, like you said, against Texas A&M, South Carolina, Alabama at the end. Yes, it's tough to sweep in baseball, especially when Auburn is not at that elite level yet. It's tough to sweep a team in baseball, especially college. But
well, even considering where Auburn's pitching staff is at right
exactly,
now.
I mean, exactly.
It's very difficult to do.
It's going
to
be difficult. But if Auburn can just stay course, do what they're doing right now, they're doing exactly what they need to do. And so, but like a game tomorrow night against South Alabama, that can't be a game Auburn baseball drops either.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to lose a midweek game at some point. But and South Alabama is one that I can bear a loss because they're a pretty good baseball program.
That's it for the Monday edition of On the Line. If you missed any of it, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay safe. See ya.